From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, this is your SDPB News Podcast. I'm Jackson Dirks. Today, we'll discuss a survey being done in hopes to get the most accurate data on South Dakota's unhoused population. We'll also look at what happened to cause the death of a bald eagle in the Black Hills National Forest. It's Tuesday, December 16th. Here are today's stories. The State Housing Authority is conducting the Point in Time, or PIT, survey just after the new year. The goal is to get the most accurate tally of South Dakota's unhoused population, SDPB's CJ Keene reports.
Joseph Telk is the Continuum of Care Administrator at the State Housing Authority. He says there are challenges to wanting a complete picture of the unhoused population, especially in rural areas.
It's very difficult, you know, to be honest. If we get any numbers in some of those rural areas, sometimes it's only the domestic violence shelters because they're the only partners that are kind of doing the work on a routine basis to report the numbers. The PIT is not truly a representation of the extent of homelessness. It's a better representation of our reach and where we can find folks to survey.
While the choice of performing the survey during the final 10 days of January may raise questions, that window has historically been legally mandated across the country by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. However, Telk said he would always want it done in this time frame.
We want to make sure that we're producing data that is one-to-one with other communities. Now, as far as it being cold, winter is when people are most concerned about the ability of unsheltered people to survive. Because at the same time that we're counting, it's also a bit of an outreach opportunity.
With the survey fast approaching, Telk says everyday South Dakotans should consider how they can help their communities too.
The majority of partners we're working with, I know that this is a tough year for them. With the affordability crisis, private donations are being scaled back. Federal funds are a bit in a chaotic place. This is really the time where the community, you know, if they can embrace these programs and help support them, it's just so much better to support them than it is to fight them, because then you're going to see the outcomes that everybody in the community wants to see.
When shelters have volunteers and proper community support, that outcome, according to Telk, is an overall reduction in the unhoused population. I'm SDPB's CJ Keene in Rapid City.
In late November, two hikers in the Black Hills National Forest reported a bald eagle in distress. The eagle was located deceased a few hours later by volunteers with the Black Hills Raptor Center. It's now been confirmed that the eagle suffered from lead poisoning, a risk for wildlife and hunting areas. SDPB's Delaney LaHood Burns reports.
Eagles and other wildlife can experience secondary lead poisoning when they consume gut pilings left behind by hunters using lead ammunition or anglers using lead tackle. Maggie Engler is the executive director of the Black Hills Raptor Center. She says the eagle's liver was sent for testing at the North Dakota State University Veterinary Diagnostic Lab.
And we received word on Friday that the bird had a toxic level of lead in its system. The scale that they used is parts per million, and anything over 10 parts per million with the test that they use would be considered dangerously high and potentially lethal, and this bird had 24 parts per million in its body.
In 2022, a study of lead exposure in bald and golden eagles across 38 states found that nearly 50% of the birds sampled were suffering from chronic lead poisoning. Engler says hunters can prevent unintended lead poisoning by switching to non-toxic ammunition, such as copper bullets, or by burying gut piles after they finish harvesting their game. Engler believes voluntary actions are the best approach to solving this issue due to the pushback she's witnessed with mandates.
This is a matter of choice. It will take us longer to get the majority of people over to using non-lead ammunition, but it is doable. And if we start educating and follow the lead of other states that have done voluntary efforts to promote non-lead, we too can make a difference for the wildlife here in South Dakota.
A new coalition led by the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers of South Dakota is launching an initiative called Hunt Lead Free South Dakota. They're providing free boxes of non-toxic ammunition to hunters with a 2026 deer, elk, or antelope license in the Black Hills Fire Protection District, the same area where the deceased bald eagle was located. I'm SDPB's Delaney LaHood Burns.
Local philanthropists are donating $1 million towards a new indoor pool in Sioux Falls. The donation will fund the pool at the planned Frank Olson Recreation Center. Joe and Jennifer Kirby donated the funds for naming rights at the pool. Jennifer Kirby says she swims at the Midco Aquatic Center nearly every day. She recounts a time she spoke with someone about the importance of aquatics on both mental and physical health.
She looked right at me. She said, "Better than antidepressants." And I thought, wow, this isn't just a nice to have thing. This is an important thing. If we can have an activity replacing medication. And it made me realize this is serious. It's serious business. It can feel like an icing on the cake, but really, if we're helping people physically and mentally, that's about the best thing the city can do for its residents.
The donation means the pool at the future facility would be called the Kirby Pool if approved by the Sioux Falls City Council. The council already approved $47 million for the Indoor Recreation Center. The city's Parks and Recreation Department says the donation will specifically go towards construction costs or potential enhancements. Parks and Recreation officials say they don't expect the Kirby's gift to lower the bonding amount for the total project. Drivers on Highway 14A near Deadwood may experience delays for a rock blast tomorrow afternoon. The South Dakota Department of Transportation says the blast is part of a backslope repair project near Camp 5 Road. The project is a proactive measure to reduce landslide risks in the area. The blast is scheduled for Wednesday afternoon on Highway 14A, about 4 miles east of Deadwood. Flaggers will stop traffic at a safe distance and hold until receiving the all clear from the blast crew. The Department of Transportation is encouraging motorists to use alternative routes during the planned blast. Preliminary estimates show South Dakota's unemployment rate increased 0.1% to 2% in September this year. September numbers were just released due to the government shutdown this fall. The labor force in South Dakota decreased by 300 workers in September. That brings the state to 3.2% or 9,700 people unemployed. Initial filings for unemployment benefits in South Dakota rose last week compared with the week prior, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. New jobless claims increased to 729 in the week ending December 6th. That's up from 373 the week before. The South Dakota Community Foundation recently awarded a $10,000 Native American Education Fund grant to the Rosebud Scholarship Fund. The money will support students wanting to make a difference in their community. Troy Blake is the Rosebud Scholarship Fund executive director. He told the Lakota Times the grant is a momentum builder. The scholarship fund offers a $500 per semester incentive to Sichangu Lakota students enrolled in a higher education program. Students in return sign a pledge to use their education to create change in their home reservation of Rosebud. The program also provides students with peer mentorships and professional development opportunities. The Brookings Municipal Utilities is opening a new water treatment plant. The $70 million project used state revolving fund financing and federal dollars to construct a new facility. The project took 10 years and is designed to provide additional water to the city along with replacing old infrastructure. The new facility, in conjunction with the existing East Water Treatment Plant, will provide up to 10 million gallons of treated water per day. Seth Hansen is vice president of the BMU Board of Directors. He said, at the ribbon cutting for the new plant, that reliable water ensures future growth for the community. The former North plant is set to be demolished in May. Imagine it's 1913 near Horse Butte, South Dakota. You and a friend are hauling a one-room schoolhouse atop two horse-drawn wagons 10 miles across the prairie to Mud Butte. Classes at the Royal Center Schoolhouse started in December that year, and it remained in operation until 1951. Now, fast forward 73 years, a reunion of sorts to celebrate the newly restored building, which was placed on the National Register of Historic Places. That's where we revisit this 2024 story from Crystal Mija.
Around 90 people gathered about 25 miles north of Union Center for this celebration. Among the attendees, six of the school's former students and one former teacher. Lila Ingalls Brownlee and her husband, Phil, made 8 trips from Kansas to Mud Butte to spearhead the restoration, together with her dad, Hugh Ingalls, who was one of the school's former students.
It starts with an appreciation for history. And honestly, underneath that, I was looking for new ways to connect with my dad, and I live 700 miles away, and he loves local history, he loves family history, and I saw him sitting at the dining room table at the ranch reading old township records from Royal Center township meetings that he'd gotten his hands on, and you know, looking at the old homestead maps, and I don't know, I started out to be just sitting down to spend time with him, and I just totally got into it.
So. It took more than 1,000 hours over the course of 2.5 years to restore the building, with dozens of volunteers and help from a historic preservation consultant. Buried among the decades of dust and rodent droppings, emerged historical treasures: a cursive alphabet banner, teacher record books dating back to 1931, and textbooks with the kids' signatures on the inside covers. Along one wall, a chalkboard reflecting the names and dates of some of those same students who came back to visit the school since its closure. Anne Ingalls Mahaffey attended the Royal Center School for 7 years in the 40s until it closed in 1951.
I'm just surprised the way it looks. It's much nicer than it was when I went to school, actually.
That's a sentiment shared by quite a few of the former students and teacher, but they also share other memories. One of them, getting to and from school, but forget walking uphill both ways in the snow. Here's Elaine Ingalls Rowett, a student from 41 to 47.
But if the weather was winter and very cold, we came in a bobsled. They used it for feeding the cattle. So there was hay in the bottom of this big bobsled, and we would lay down on that hay, and they would put the robe, it was a cattle skin, over us so we would be warm.
Mahaffey remembers those horse-drawn bobsleds, but often had transportation of her own.
We rode horses. I had a little horse. It was not a nice horse. Didn't have any shoulders to hold the saddle on. Me and the saddle would go over his head, and he'd take off running and catch up with him. Oh, I just hated that horse.
Logistics could also be an issue for the teachers. Gladys Pullins taught at the school from 47 to 48. Back then, Pullins and her husband lived too far away to commute every day, so she'd often stay a week at a time. But she didn't want to stay alone, so a couple of the students would stay with her.
We had lights, just a lamp, you know, no electricity, no running water. So you had to get up in the middle of the night. You had to go outside. And mice, I'm scared to death of mice. And I remember having mice in here. And my husband got some traps.
Brownlee is content to steep in the nostalgia of today's celebration, but she is looking ahead.
When I come home for our just to visit, my parents are elderly, so that's getting, you know, I don't know what the future is going to look like and how different it will be for me to come up when they're gone. But the land is really such a part of me. And it's going to be different.
Brownlee says long-term, they do have some work to do to keep the building preserved, especially on the windows. But first, she says she needs to thank her husband for picking up the slack while she was immersed in the project, and she needs a little rest. I'm SDPB's Crystal Maija.
And that's your daily news update. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, X, and YouTube at SDPB News, and visit sdpb.org/news to stay up to date on our journalism as it comes in. As always, thanks for listening.